The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Preparing the Ruins, the 2015 Annual Conference Recordings, copyright 2015. If you have purchased this recording, you may make additional copies for use by your school. You may not sell copies of the recording, nor post it on the internet. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at www.accsedu.org.
All right, we're going to get started here. Psalm 33, verses 1 through 3 says, "Rejoice in the Lord, O ye righteous, for praise is comely for the upright. Praise the Lord with a harp, sing unto him with a psaltery and an instrument of 10 strings. Sing unto him a new song, play the strings skillfully with a loud noise. I take my calling to teach music from my love of music, the skills God has graciously given me, and the challenge given in verse 3 there. It says, sing a new song and play skillfully with a loud noise. The loud part the kids have done really well. It's the skillfully we're continually working on. This is commanded in Scripture. My name is Karen Graham, and I teach 4th through 12th grade band and orchestra at Schaefer Academy. And I also teach a couple of music appreciation classes for 7th and 10th grade. And I've taught at Schaefer now for 8 years, and I have a bachelor's degree in K-12 music education.
And I'm Mary Vogel, and I teach K-6 music education at Schaefer and K-12 choir, and I have a BA also in music education. And I've taught at Schaefer for the past 9 years. We're located in Rochester, Minnesota, and we have a school of about 375 students, K-12. I'm just curious, how many here have a school of about that size, about 350? How many are fewer? How many are greater? Okay, of those of you who are greater, I'm curious, what is your size? A thousand, okay. Okay. Anyone else? Yes. Okay. Wow. Terrific. Anyone else? Okay. So a thousand or under is kind of where we're at here. Okay. All right.
And then along that same line, which of you have give a choir program? Raise your hand. Okay. Give a band program? Raise your hand. Give an orchestra program? Okay, it's just the very large.
Yeah.
You can do it with a small school. Okay, we'll continue.
Yeah, we will.
And
we'll talk about it. Okay, so Schaefer Academy was named after Dr. Francis Schaefer, who was a Christian philosopher and theologian. And for a little while, he made his home in Rochester, Minnesota. Our founders made the connection between Dr. Schaefer's ideas and their own desire to teach the permanent things, truth, goodness, and beauty. So the school has been committed to teaching music and the arts since its beginning. And our handbook states that our mission is to train students to sing knowledgeably and joyfully to the Lord on a regular basis, to emphasize high culture music as opposed to popular culture music, and to systematically instruct students in the fundamentals of vocal and instrumental music. We're also to encourage the students to become proficient musicians in vocal and instrumental music. And we'd like to begin with a quote from Zoltán Kodály, the Hungarian composer and music educator that most of us know. He wrote, "Teach music and singing to children in such a way that it's not torture, but a joy for the pupil. Instill a thirst for finer music in him, a thirst that will last a lifetime." And that's what's in our hearts as educators.
So first of all, we're going to kind of talk about applying the classical model to music education. When I first started teaching 8 years ago at Schaefer Academy, I had not been classically trained except for what I had studied and looked at my own. I had homeschooled for 7 years before that, and I was Lynn U. Schaefer and had close friends that taught there and had their kids there. And so as a homeschooler, I was interested in the classical model. So I researched, and then as I went to Schaefer, I started teaching band and orchestra. And I spent my thinking, who can I ask questions? What's the classical model? How do I apply this to my groups? How can I transfer this band to orchestra, which I was teaching? So I kind of came up with my own thing. And this is actually something I teach my students. I have, we have worksheets we pass out. I have a quiz I put together, which I have it all on my computer, and I can email it to you if you're interested in just getting it. It's nice just to take the wheel and go with it versus trying to create your own. But so first of all, the first question we have, what are the three levels of learning in the classical model? This is easy. We have, everybody, grammar, logic, and rhetoric. Okay, so those are the first three levels. So I talk to my students about, of course, by the time, I do this in 7th through 12th grade in my groups, and by the time they get to this level, hopefully they know this. If not, we're just reinforcing what they've already known. So first of all, when you talk about grammar.
All right, let's start at the very beginning, a very good place to start. Okay. I use the Bob Jones curriculum for general music, and they begin with the five elements of music, and I have a little chant that I teach to my first graders and on through up throughout elementary school, and that is melody, harmony, rhythm, expressive controls, and form. Repeat that after me, would you please? One, two, ready, go. Melody, harmony, rhythm, expressive controls, and form. Not too bad. Melody, the element of vertical pitch, or horizontal pitch, I'm sorry. Harmony, the element of vertical pitch. Rhythm, the element of time. Expressive controls, the elements of speech, volume, and tone, color, and form, the elements of structure. Now, the first graders aren't going to understand all of that to begin with, so this is where we fill in with all of the grammar. But by sixth grade, they get it. You know, they've memorized the melody, harmony, rhythm, expressive controls, and form. And as we build and add into that outline, they really get it. They connect those dots, and by sixth grade, it's like, oh, wow, that's what that means. All right. So what are some of our elements of grammar? Well, the note names. We teach absolute pitch, treble and bass clef notes, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and the relative pitch, the solfège, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti. The note values, quarter notes, half notes, whole notes, and their rest. Dynamics, pianissimo to fortissimo. Tempos, allegro, moderato, and so forth. Articulation, marcato, legato. Embouchure, how to shape your mouth to play the instrument, which is no easy thing to teach. Instrument families, strings, woodwinds, brass, percussion, and all the family members. Vocal timbres, treble, cambiata, the male changing voice, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. The forms of music, binary, the AB, ternary, rondo, sonata, and so forth. And then finally, concert etiquette, which is really one of my big soapboxes. I think we really are training our children to be future audience participants as well as performers. And they need to know how to receive music, listen to it, and perform it humbly, you know, before their audience of one, ideally, is God, you know. So the questions there we address is, how do we behave as audience members? When do we clap? That's a real big one. Part of what I do with my elementary curriculum is we go up to Orchestra Hall once a year, starting in third grade, and hear Minnesota Orchestra play, perform young people's concerts. I'd really encourage you to do that if you don't already have that built into your school year. And they learn how to be an audience member there, to watch the conductor, watch those arms go down. Oh, that's when we get to clap. Oh, look at those kids, Mrs. Vogel. They clapped at the wrong time. They clapped between movements. Okay? So And then we're also training our parents, because I don't know how many of you have concerts and you have parents get up in the middle of the song and walk out or open your gym door and let in a ton of light when you're right in the middle of a very sensitive piece of music and walk in with a whole line of kids or you know, whatever. Anyway, we don't know concert etiquette. We really don't. We know how to behave at a basketball game, but that's not how we behave at our concerts. So I'll leave it there, and we will move on to logic.
Okay, so now how do we take all those elements of grammar and put them together logically? Does anybody have any idea of what you would consider the logic level? Does anybody have, you can raise your hand, an idea of something like those? That would be what I call the grammar of music. Logic would be moving. Do you have any ideas? Grace? Yeah? Playing, actually playing or singing. That's moving on to the next step, putting things together. Any other ideas? What was that? Theory, taking key signatures, you know, figuring out what it, you learned what a flat was, you move the note down a half step and a sharp is going up a half step. But now we're going to put like three flats together, and what are the order of those flats, and what scale does that make, and then does the scale major, is the scale minor? So it's taking these and putting them together logically. And I just kind of got a list of things, and we talked through this with my students, and I just say, okay, we talked about the grammar, you guys, and they actually give me ideas of what more grammar would be, and or this would be grammar too. And then you always have these arguments. No, that would be logic. No, that would be grammar. You know, there are always arguments in class sometimes. But so scales, major or minor. And those of you that came in with it late, there are some handouts back in there, and then they came in with more handouts too. You can get later from the literature list, but we also have the slideshow on handout if you want to follow along with that too. Go get that. So we have key signatures, you know, how many flats and sharps are in a piece, keep moving on, rhythms, how do the rhythms fit the mood or the style of the piece. We have a piece by a composer like Bach. He would have definitely different rhythms than Scott Joplin. And so how do they change and why do they change? What was the composer thinking? Applying the dynamics, articulations, and tempos to music. So that's the next, it's the logic step. And then understanding why a composer would combine certain instruments or voices to create a certain mood or dynamic. And then tone quality or timbre. My fourth graders sound a lot different than my 12th graders, and they rightly should, as they've been playing a lot longer. And so that's a growth process of applying the logic, applying the grammar that they've learned. Just the basic embouchure, you can get a sound out of an instrument, but sometimes always isn't very pretty, and you got to learn and grow through that. And then phrasing, learning phrasing and how to give the message of the music across. So then we go to the rhetoric level. And to me, the point of rhetoric is performance. Even our kindergartens get to the rhetoric level. You know, when they're performing in a concert, they get to have rhetoric. And I tell this to my fourth graders, you know, you guys are looking ahead to get to the rhetoric level as you get older, but you are at the rhetoric level in fourth grade. When we have this concert next week, you've gone through grammar, then the logic, now the rhetoric. And just reinforcing these terms throughout different classes, I think, is a good for our students. Composition. We don't have a composition class at our school. It's not built in, but I actually have students that have composed pieces, and some we've performed at concerts, sometimes just in the classroom, depending on the level, sometimes an ensemble thing. I've actually had probably over the years 10 different pieces that kids have performed, and I've kind of given some tools and that they can use for that. And improvisation, another form of rhetoric, you know, taking all the stuff you've learned in jazz. We have a jazz band, and there's jazz that's sung in small ensembles and some choir pieces sometimes. And then also conducting. Every day I stand up in class, I'm at that rhetoric level of taking everything I've learned and pulling it together and trying to transfer it to my students. But then I actually often have student conductors, my older upperclassmen. When I have a sub coming, I'll say, anybody want to try to conduct a piece or just help out the sub? Because a lot of times my subs, as you music teachers know, don't know much about music. And that's fine, but these students have been practicing this music, and they know what they need to work on, and some of them actually have some really good ideas, and they're telling me, oh, we need to work on this section. I'm like, why don't you do that when I'm gone next week? You can work on that section. We'll see how it is to stand in front. But they actually really enjoy it, and I've had several students actually go on into music. But then there's some that have just enjoyed. I had one student this past year who I think is going to be an engineer. He just graduated. But he was conducting for my pet band. I couldn't make it, so I started pet band. And he was like, I'll do it. And he conducted, and he loved it. And he was a percussionist, and he just loved conducting. And he kept doing it off and on throughout the school year. And then he did it again here at my last concert. And I just gave him a piece, and he just said, I'll conduct it. And he enjoyed doing that. And so I think that's just great. And then accompanists, we also have students that are accompanying along, too.
Okay, now we're going to talk about rehearsal and how our week looks at Schaefer Academy. Okay, with our elementary choirs, I have one weekly 40-minute rehearsal with them a week, and that's per grade. So I'll see all of the first graders for one 40-minute rehearsal, all of the second graders, and so forth. And this includes preparation of two memorized pieces for the Christmas and spring concerts. We have two concerts a year. First and second grade choir, we've got about 50 or 60 in that choir. And my focus is pretty much on unison songs. Obviously, we're just trying to get them to match pitch, to all sing on the same pitch, and sing in unison. So unison songs, canons, and we have sung in foreign languages, and my list will tell you exactly what we've done. They've done German and Latin, of course, and Italian. Third and fourth grade, on top of the unison songs, we add the two-part songs, the partner songs, the canons, death chants, and again, the foreign languages. And in fifth and sixth grade, my focus is going to be more on really strong two-part to three-part pieces, treble choir. And they have sung the three major composers listed there, Mozart, Handel, and Bach. Middle school choir, and you can see my pictures there of middle school choir. This is where choral music becomes an elective in seventh grade at Schaefer. Otherwise, it's built into the day. We have two weekly 40-minute rehearsals on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can see the choir is relatively small. I had 12 at the beginning of the year for Christmas, and spring I actually picked up three guys. And I ended up with 15. In the past, middle school and secondary choir have been one big choir. I took over the formal direction of middle school and secondary last year. And I decided, you know, the jump from sixth grade music to SATB is just way too steep for these guys. And we had lost, obviously, we'd lost a lot of middle schoolers. So I made the transition, and I thought, you know, we're small and mighty, but we're going to do it. And we did. They sounded terrific. They did SAB music, and they sounded great. So, again, we prepared 2 to 3 memorized pieces for Christmas and spring. Focus here has to be on music for that changing male voice. Wow. And if any of you have a lot of expertise on that, see me afterwards, because I really would like to talk with you. It's really fun. You never know from one rehearsal to the next how many altos you're going to have, sopranos or basses. I started the year with 2 basses and ended with 5. So, yes. Secondary choir. This is an elective for grades 9 through 12, and we have 3 rehearsals a week. We have 4 to 5 memorized pieces for Christmas and spring. I have 2 memorized pieces for graduation. Repertoire is SATB to SSAATTBD, depending, again, on the difficulty. The focus is going to be on a variety of styles, genres, major composers, and some masterworks. And I try to have pieces representative of all musical time periods, although I may not lump them all together in one concert. Usually it's kind of staggered throughout the year. We also encourage participation in the school musical, and you can see some pictures of the musicals we have done in the past 9 years that I've been there. We have performed Sound of Music, Fiddler on the Roof, and Hello Dolly. Those are the three we have done. We alternate it with a coffee concert on the other year, and that gives the kids a chance to showcase more of the popular music, or with the rise of all of the vocal a cappella groups like Pentatonix, they love it. They just absolutely love it. And we don't have time in our all-school concerts to program that, so the coffee concert's there. And I'm going to let you... Oh, this is me. Yes, okay. I'm very sorry. All right. Rehearsal focus. Okay. So I'll begin my rehearsals with respiration, breathing, and you start just with relaxation, you know, roll the shoulders, do stretches, so forth. Posture, breath management. I have a little song I teach my first graders, backbone straight, chest held high, keep your chin down, here's the reason why. Organ types and voices, too, all work best when the air flows through. And it's something they take with them. How many use that one, by the way? No? Oh, okay. It's just a wonderful little ditty that, again, they just take with them forever. And then we teach singing positions. Anyone do that? Pause the position 0, 1, and 2. Okay, you're all in really nice 0 position. You're resting comfortably. First position is sitting forward on your chair with your feet flat on the floor. Okay, and your backbone is nice and straight. You're sitting, standing from your waist up. Okay, and then when you stand, that is position 2 for singing, and we all know that. Okay, let's see. Tone color production. Elementary, the focus is on developing that beautiful head tone, light and forward. We do lots of pitch exploration, sirens, sighs. I teach them to talk like Miss Piggy or in a British accent. And that really, really helps them focus that tone forward. Middle school and secondary, we work on tone colors to match the style of the piece. If we're doing a spiritual, it's going to be darker, heavier tone. Oh, we just lost. Well, I'll let you follow along in your outline. Vowel production, again, we're working on separating those molars to create the space for tall vowels, okay? And, I mean, this page, we could spend an entire workshop just on this page or just on respiration, you know? But what we're trying to do is give you kind of a rundown of what we do. And then diction, articulation, pronunciation, expression, phrasing, dynamics, and tempo variation. When can we breathe? You know, when you talk through a piece with them, where do you breathe? Put in that breath mark. And then lastly, the artistic expression. It's the feeling that's conveyed to the audience through that piece of music. Your piece can have technical excellence. You might cross all your T's and dot your I's, but you may not breathe that life into that piece of music. I find what I have to do as a conductor is to just give them the enthusiasm that I feel for this piece of music. Why am I enthusiastic about it? And usually it's tied up in the next line, which is the text, the genre, the composer, the musical era. All of this works together, you know. So it's just transferring that enthusiasm to the student that really gives the artistic expression of the piece. And we're going to be without.
We may.
Okay.
That's fine. You've got us in front of you there. When I first came to Schaefer 8 years ago, they had a band program that had already started, and had a good director ahead of me, then they had a year with no director before I came, and so they were like anxious to get somebody in there to get all these instruments used. These people purchased all these instruments with the previous band director, and so I came, and they were just thrilled that I came, and I ran with it. I had like probably 45 elementary kids and only like 14 kids in the high school, junior high, high school. But that has continued to grow and keep growing, and now I have like almost 110 kids. I think I have 65 in my upper school band, and then my elementary band, they're divided out of, like, you see their beginning band, elementary band, and then strings. And when I came, they did not have a string program at all at Schaefer, and they were really wanting to start a string program, and that was their goal, and I was willing to start it. I had two of my children had just started to learn to play string instruments, and so I was familiar with some of the, you know, the techniques of starting and learning, was had always been interested in learning how to play a string instrument, and I've been brass my whole life and vocal. And so I think it could just be this, but I'll just keep talking while you go there. So they're like, when we talk to the administration, how are you going to start how do you have any ideas? And so when we started off, we decided to put it opposite choir somewhat, a little bit, because we didn't want to pull all of our students from choir. The band, it would be perfect to put orchestra opposite band, because there's only like one or two students that are in both of those organizations, both groups, and usually they're more proficient in one or the other, and they're just kind of social, and they like to be in both. But so what we did, my first year I came, we chose to have choir, orchestra be opposite choir just one day a week. And the first year I was there, it was only 8 total students. I had one beginner in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade. And then I had 7 students who had already been playing with private teachers, junior high and high school. So it was just 7 students. And of those 7, I think only 3 were in choir. So one day a week, those 3 missed their choir rehearsal, and all 7 of us were rehearsed. And I chose music accordingly. One of those students was like an incredible violinist. She was like way beyond. I haven't had one that advanced. She was a freshman and had been taking since 4 years old. She was very, very good on the violin. But she was very gracious because we had one rehearsal a week in our first concert. We'd only had like 8 rehearsals total. So you choose music accordingly, and you choose music that you can play together well. And then it's also a part of the learning process of finding music, too. Finding music that sounds harder than it is, or has, like for this violinist who was really good. You know, I had a part that had like a solo violin part or something. And so she was able to do that, and the others could learn from that. And so that's how it started off. Now, a few years ago, we actually changed it. So now, actually during choir now, I meet every day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, while choir is meeting, orchestra is meeting. But the students that want to do choir and orchestra, they come to orchestra one day and choir 2 days. But then out of that 28 students I had this past year, I have actually 18 that aren't in choir, that are doing just orchestra. So, and it's all the middle schoolers, so they meet on a different day, which they need the most work anyway. So it really has evolved, and this, I feel like we can do so much more music versus just the one day a week. Now with meeting with the bulk of them, 2/3 of them, 3 days a week, we can do a lot more difficult pieces as we are doing music. And you kind of see from my literature list, if you're familiar with the grading level of music, my first year or 2, we did a lot of the grade 2 level music to 3, and now we're doing some 3 and some 4, but not all 3 and 4, grade 3 and 4 level music. There's always still some fun or some easier ones put in there so everybody has good success, because there's sometimes a wide range of skills from 7th grade to 12th grade, and sometimes I have some 7th graders that are better than my 12th graders too, depending on when they started playing. So we have 3 elementary groups. I have a beginning band, which is 4th grade. We start them off in 3rd grade. At the end of 3rd grade, they get to try out all the instruments. They do recorders in 3rd grade to kind of learn the connection of, you know, fingering to embouchure and all that stuff. And so the beginners, and if you want to find out about recruitment, I actually have a whole system where I actually have my older kids. My 7th to 12th graders help me with all my recruitment. They help the kids try out the instruments, and it's really a lot of fun. The kids, my older kids love it. They look forward to it, and, of course, the 3rd graders can't wait. If you'd like more information on that and all my handouts I have on that, just let me know, and we could, you know, trade emails, and I could email all that information to you if you're interested afterwards. And so then fourth grade, they start, so I have a beginning band, and then I have a fifth and sixth grade band who they rehearse one day a week. All these elementary groups just rehearse one day a week and for about a 35-minute rehearsal. And then the fourth grade band is right after school for about 35 minutes one day, strings right after school another day, and then in the fifth and sixth grade band actually meets during the school day. So those are my three elementary groups. My beginning strings, they join the upper elementary strings like after a semester, and they come, and I just tell them when they come in, it's okay if you can't play everything. It's, you just play what you can, and we're going to focus on this section and this section of this piece. And I generally actually bring out a pretty easy piece for them all to learn so they have good success right away. But those older kids, they really, some of them really, or the more advanced, enjoy bringing them along and helping them out too. So it's kind of a joint effort. And they have two concerts a year. They have a concert in January, so at the end of first semester we have a concert, and then at the end of the year we have another concert in May. And I have those during the school day. We have it over like a lunch time from 12:30 to about 1:15, so parents can get away from lunch. I used to have these concerts in the evening, and then I thought, you know, everything that elementary kids do is during the school day, and it's so much more stressful for them and the parents trying to get there again. I said, let's just put this during the school day. And most all the parents seems like can get away from lunch and come to the concert. And so that works really good. And about three pieces from each group will perform at those. And they actually play. We rehearse more songs than that usually through the year. It depends on the group and the level of music that we're at. We rehearse more and learn more, but we generally do three. I try not to have my elementary concerts so long, and then like 40 minutes, 45 minutes. Mainly because these K-6 is also invited to this concert, so they're seeing the bigger kids play and getting excited about starting. And then in our elementary, our secondary group, I have three different groups at secondary that perform. I have a strings group, which is 7th through 12th grade strings all together, and then 7th through 12th grade band all together. Then I have a jazz band that's kind of an extra thing we do. We meet before school for like 40 minutes. It's just kind of a fun thing that we started a few years ago. And we have, I would say, two main concerts for our instrumental art. I call two main concerts, the one in October and then the one in mid-April. Those are, I would consider, my concerts. When I first came to Schaefer, the band concerts and orchestra concerts were part of the all-school concert when the program was really small, which was fine then because, like, the high school band only had 14 kids. That would be how many parents? Like, maybe 20 people coming to hear them play. And so it was good to have it part of the whole thing. But my second year there, I said, you know, but the concert's getting way too long. We had strings and we had elementary band, all these, and I have like seven different groups. So seven different groups plus all the different choirs that Mary mentioned, it was way too long. And so they were only having to play one piece or two pieces. So I developed my own concert times. So the October and mid-April would be my instrumental concerts where my high school strings play, my high school band plays, and then the jazz band plays. And those are fun. And then we also stayed part of the all-school choral concert. So we play prelude music, and we'll do incidental music, but we're not the featured part of it, which it's great because there's like 1,000 people that come to our all-school choral concerts. And so I think it's a great way for my students to be heard, and they also like it because it's low stress, because quote-unquote nobody's listening. We're just playing off in the corner, but they can't help but listen to some of the songs. It's a lot of volume with 65 students playing together. I play for Pet Band, and we have an auction we do in March that the jazz band plays at. It's funny, they play during the silent auction part, but it's not very silent when the jazz band's playing. And then the strings play as dinner music, which is really fun because it's just kind of showcasing, you know, what we're doing together and pulling together these students at our school. And then we also play at graduation, and it's quite the privilege, I tell these students, to be able to play at graduation. It's an honor to be a part of that. Okay. And so, the next one. We have, I kind of mentioned this already, but we have three 40-minute rehearsals a week. And And then we have 3 to 5 pieces we prepare for each concert, depending on, usually my fall concert sometimes comes in just 6 weeks or 7 weeks, depending on the school schedule. So that one generally only 3 pieces. But then, like, and then we prepare music for the Christmas time. And then after Christmas, we start in January. We have, like, 4 months sometimes to prepare. So, like, this last concert, I had 5 pieces. And I was like, I don't want to do too much, but I'm like, there was none we could cut because they all had these different feel and just fun. And the kids were just enjoying it. Let's just do them all. So we just did them all. And then as you can see on the bottom there, we have small group ensemble. That's a flute choir there on the left. But they've actually won quite a few awards in the State High School League contest. I have some really good flute players. And so they've won like outstanding best of sight at these State High School League contests. But then we have the same things we're encouraging the students to perform at. Okay. So that's how our yearly schedule looks. Now we're going to talk about what we use throughout the year here.
Okay. As I said before, our general music curriculum is the Bob Jones curriculum, and I have lots and lots of supplemental materials that I use with that, but that would be for another discussion. And then for my choir, these are some of my tried, true, and tested vocal production resources. I absolutely love the First Steps in Music. Anyone here use that? The John Feuerbend, I think that's how you say his name. That is absolutely wonderful for the lower elementary grades. And I love Helen Kemp's collections, her Canon Songs and Blessings, and Where in the World Folk Song Warm Up. So these would be like the first 5 minutes, the warm-up section of the choir period. Middle and upper school, sing legato with Kenneth Jennings. He's out of St. Olaf, big choral college in Minnesota. Wonderful, wonderful book. The Choral Warm-Up Collection by Sally K. Albrecht. Sing at First Sight. For sight singing, this is a newer resource put together by Andy Beck and friends. And I like that one because it uses interval training and interval singing as well as the solfège. So for those of us who are not solfège, 100%, it's a really nice combination. And then the Building Beautiful Voices Must Have by Paul Nesham and Weston Noble, again, from Luther College. Another choral bastion of wealth. Choral resource materials. I cannot say enough wonderful things, and I wish they would pay me to talk about this, but they won't. Teaching music through performance in choir. This is an amazing series. How many know of this or have this? Oh, okay, there are some of you. Karen brought the Teaching Music Through Performance in Band series. But in choir, there are 3 volumes, and it's kind of geared more towards secondary choir. There's a middle school volume as well. But these folks have gone through 500 years of choral literature, and they have pulled out the tried, true, and tested favorites. They have researched. They give you rehearsal notes, historical perspective, composer information. I mean, it's a huge wealth of knowledge. And if you want to look at Karen's book, it's up here, and it's the band one, but the choral book is patterned after that as well. Okay. Now, for teaching music, teaching instruments, there is so many curriculums out there available. In fact, I have a director friend who's just in the next town over in the public school. He's like, hey, I just wrote a new curriculum. You want to look at it? And I'm like, he's a great teacher, and I really respect what he's doing. I'm like, sure, I'll look at it, because I'm sure he's got great ideas, and there's so many out there. And I'll just show you the few we use, and you're welcome to look at them, but we started with this Accent on Achievement before I came, and I like it, so we use that there for band. And then for strings, we use Essential Elements 2000. There is an Essential Elements 2000 for band, which I really like too, but it came out
after I came, and it's got, we had all the stuff for the Excellence on Achievement. It's really good, too, if you're just starting out. But one thing that's great, and if you're interested in looking at these, you don't have to be proficient in every instrument to teach these instruments. These books are so good at giving instruction to you as a teacher to share with the students, and then the teacher book also gives a lot more information for you to share, you know, how to troubleshoot. You can't get a sound a certain way. You know, it's just, there's a lot of information and reminders for the students. And then one big thing, if you're teaching an instrument, so the students learn with the students. The kids think I can play every instrument under the sun, younger kids, but it's like, well, I've been playing with them. I play with them in their lessons. And my first year, I wasn't so good. I was always trying to hide the fact that I didn't know the fingering for that note over there. And I'm like, so how do you finger that? It was always a little quiz. And then they say, oh, this. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm just testing your. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't remember. Now I've learned the basics, you know, through the first 3 years. I can remember those. And it's actually a lot of fun. I think I've got this job where I get to play instruments with kids all day. And it's really fun because I'm learning with them and just sharing it. And also, I remember when I was hired, they talked about, well, you're not proficient on all these instruments. How do you? I said, I understand why they can't get a sound out of the flute, because I couldn't get a sound 3 months ago, too, you know, or something like that, because I can kind of learn with them. And then in secondary, I have just a few things that I've used. This is what I used when I first started the jazz band, because I played in a jazz band in high school, but I was like, what do I do? How do I teach improvisation? This was a good starter. There's other curriculums out there too, but this was a good starter for our group. It was a book, and it's actually like 12 arrangements in the book, but it teaches how to, if you just want to get started, and they have it for every instrument. So if you have a French horn that wants to play, let them play. Get them one of these books, be part of the group, and so it'd be the right key. And then in concert band, I have a book like this that just has, I got it my first year, it's kind of like their workbook that's in their folders. It has scales in it and warm-ups and just different things. And I'm actually switching to this one this year, because this one I've used now for 8 years, and it has chorales and different things. I feel like I've used the stuff way too much. So I'm getting a new one that has just a lot more stuff in it for strings and for my band orchestra. And then I've mentioned the Teaching Music Through Performance again. There's actually 8 volumes for concert band, from beginning level all the way up. There's like 3 volumes just for beginning band. There's a volume just for marches, classic marches that your students should or could play. And there's orchestra, like 2 or 3 volumes for orchestra. So that Teaching Music Through Performance is really, really good. So, there we go.
All right, now let's move into repertoire selection. For choral music, we're singing a text, so words are important. They are really important. So we first have to look at what words are being sung. Do these words have merit? If it's poetry, is this a good poem? Are they age appropriate? There are some things that, you know, my first and second grade choir will not be singing, or even my high school choir. If it's in a foreign language, can I teach it? Or do I know someone, a parent, that I can pull in to help teach the language for this piece? Now, having said all of this, you know, we're not all singing in Latin at Schaefer. We're not all singing Mozart, Bach, Handel. And I did break down 1 year. I had a group of 5th and 6th graders, primarily guys, that it was all you could do to keep them focused during the choir rehearsal. I think I'm seeing nods. I think you guys have my group of 5th and 6th graders. Well, I went to a reading session, and they had this piece of music called Duct Tape. Okay, that was the name of the song. Anyone done that? I'm just curious. Okay, anyone performed that? You have performed it. Okay, I read through this, and when I was bringing out all this wonderful, these Aaron Copland Old American songs and all these great songs that I thought these kids would really latch on to. No, and I thought, okay, how would you guys like to sing a song about duct tape?
Yeah!
Oh, Mrs. Vogel, can we make duct tape bow tie? Can we do this? Can we just... Yeah, they did. And they wore them for concert, and they sang phenomenally. Now, this song, musically, I would not put up there in my top 10% favorites of all time. But what it did was it encouraged this group of fifth and sixth grade guys, three of whom are now singing with me in secondary choir, that I, you know, never thought would continue singing on. But, you know, every once in a while, you just have to give them some cotton candy, you know. You're not always going to have a balanced diet. So, you know, just throw out some fluff. When you need to throw out fluff, you just got to do it. Okay. Next, is the range appropriate for my singers? Again, with my younger choirs, I'm thinking mainly that C to C range above middle C. They will not be singing John Rutter pieces. Maybe third and fourth grade, fifth and sixth grade. The English, I don't know what they do. I would love to study over there and find out how in the world can they get those kids to have that gorgeous head tone that they can carry up to those G's and A's. I absolutely love it. It just melts my soul. Wow. I'm working toward that. Haven't quite gotten there yet. Okay. Is the selection appropriate for the size of my ensemble? The music I choose for my middle school choir of 12 to 15, you know, I have to think more small ensemble for them. You know, they're not going to do any massive choir works. Will the piece showcase my group's strengths? Last year, I had in secondary choir Karen's daughter, who has the most gorgeous lyric soprano voice. She just soars, and those high C's are effortless for her. So, wow, could I do some wonderful pieces of music to showcase her voice? One piece I do want to highlight for you, because it's a newer piece of music. It's by an Irish composer. It's Do Not Be Afraid. And Philip Stopford, I think, is the name, the composer. You have to order it through him, unfortunately, so it's a little more expensive. But it is a gorgeous piece of a cappella music. It's Melisma. If you go to melisma.org, that's his organization over in the UK. Highly recommend it. It's absolutely gorgeous. The text is solid. But anyway, I tried to showcase Kenzie, and we also had a bass who could drop two octaves below middle C. So we had some fun with some spirituals as well. Will the selection provide harmonic variety? Are all my songs in a major key? Are they all in the key of A? Are they all within the same rhythm pattern? Am I just dealing with a pattern of two or versus three or maybe mixed meter? What is the accompaniment like? Does it enhance the piece? I'm an accompanist also. So if I play through a piece of music and I like that accompaniment and I feel like it really couples well with the melody line, especially for my first and second grade choir, that's going to rise to the top for me. I did a piece this year for spring concert. I think it's my third time I've done it. I absolutely love it. It's called Come Closer, and it's in my list by Daniel Kalman, Minnesota composer. It's a mixed meter piece, so it's a little tricky. But my first and second graders just absolutely loved it. And the piano accompaniment it pictures this little bird hopping down this meadow and meeting the singer who's acknowledging the little bird. Come closer, you know. And I just had my first and second graders visualize this, and we did a lot of movement throughout the room as we're working on this piece of music as well. And that accompaniment just makes it come alive, and especially at the end I said, okay, we've got eight measures of this little bird just hopping away at the end. You've got to listen. Listen for that little bird. Can you hear it? You know, and they, you know, they're listening, and the accompaniment just paints that picture for the students, and then that gets transferred to your audience as well. It's really, oh, so cool when that happens. Okay, what can I teach through this piece of music? Music appreciation and performance. Will it cause the students to grow and to expand? That is our goal, isn't it? We're not just doing music for us. You know, for, well, do I like the piece? Yeah, we kind of are a little bit. I think we all know we really do have to like the piece of music that we're teaching, because we have to pass on that enthusiasm to the students. But it is important to teach appreciation and give them a little bit of historical footage or whatever, moving back to the previous point as well.
Okay, we want to move along quickly here because we want to leave a little time for questions if you had questions. But as you can just get done with Mary, we both love choosing literature. When I start choosing literature through the summer, I get the one, J.W. Pepper, I mentioned it there, .com. If there's so much music recorded there, they have something called a basic library. So some of you shaking your head, has everybody in here heard of J.W. Pepper? They are a great resource, too, because you can go in there and just click on band, basic library, medium easy level, which would be like my high school level, and it'll list like 500 songs that they would have listed, what basic library pieces, or at the beginning level, or whatever level, or orchestra, or choir, or whatever you're looking at. They are a great finding resource, and then you can get everything filmed, and they work with you wonderfully. I had a piece 1 year for 2 years. I just never performed. It just never happened. And I called them and said, oh, yeah, just send it back. You never use it. We'll refund you. And they're just great about that. And they let you get all your music, look at it, and then send it all back if you don't want any of it. You just pay the shipping back. And so they work with you really well. But anyway, this is the list, and that you look at it, the kind of listing in order of how I choose my music throughout the year. Classic band literature. Band literature has only been around for about 140, 150 years, generally. It started with the military bands. John Philip Sousa was one of those military band leaders. He started writing marches just for the wind band. You know, we have this history of classical music all the way back, you know, written music from the Baroque era, you know, four to 500 years. But there's not as much written for bands. So whenever I say we play classic band literature, they think we're playing classical music. Well, we do that some. I have classical transcriptions down there. And that's fun. Like, you've done transcriptions of the 1812 Overture and Copland's Hoedown, just some different things. It's just a lot of fun for the kids to play. But the classic band literature, names under that is like Gustav Holst and Ralph Vaughan Williams and Alfred Reed. Those are names you would find in the basic library, too. And so then marches, I always have at least one or two marches, classic marches, and I use this teaching performance through marches to find what are the classic marches. And I'm on a six-year cycle, so I have 7th through 12th grade in my band. So I'm in a six-year cycle, so actually I'm going to start, now that I've been there 8 years, I can go back to some of those first marches that we did and pull them back out. And say, oh, this is a great march. I want the kids to tell you the Washington Post March. And one of my goals was Stars and Stripes Forever, not to play an arrangement of it, but to play the Stars and Stripes Forever by Sousa. And 2 years ago, I did it. My oldest son was graduating that year. I'm like, okay, we're going to play this this year. And he was so excited because he wanted to play that, and that was really a lot of fun. So marches, modern band literature, that would be stuff I call like program music. It's just a lot of fun. There's so much new music published every year. I get like 12 CD. It must be like 150 to 200 pieces from J.W. Pepper, just the new music. And some of it is classic music that they've rewritten to make it a little playable. But some is just new, like we did a piece a few years ago, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow by Andrew Boyson. It was so much fun. It had 17 percussion parts, which I had 11 percussionists, so it was great. They were really busy in the back. It had the percussion even taking a violin bow and playing it on a cymbal to get this eerie sound. It started off with the flutes playing just on the head joint, changing the pitch by moving their finger in and out of the head joint. One cool sound, all the kids said the coolest sound was the French horn. They did a half vowel, and they started low, and you know, different times through the piece. All of a sudden, two or three of them would just play it, and it was just, it was fun. And of course, the horse race at the end, the horses were going faster, 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 faster. They're requesting it. And I think my seniors next year did it when they were seventh grade. My son's going to be a senior. Another one of my sons is like, Mom, we got to do that piece one more time. I got to do it again before I graduate. So that's what I call program music. And there's fun. It's fun to kind of pick through all that music. There's just a lot out there. But I kind of go from that for band. It's kind of what I choose between my music and trying to, I don't want to do all marches or all this or all that, and kind of choose between that through every concert. And then string, it's a little different in the fact that I want my students to have a lot of the classical music, because that's the depth and that's the breadth of their literature. And so it'll be like more, if there are five pieces, we'd have 3 to 4 would be classical literature. And then I choose from the other area, the sacred, the fiddling, Irish music, folk music, to be the other one or two pieces that we include. So that's kind of, and then we have tools we've written down. There's local organizations that you can be a part of. These are just some things that we've listed down. You've got them listed too. And like, we have those literature lists. These are just things we found that we've liked. Now, I don't know if we're out of time. We have 1 minute for questions, I guess. We can leave more time for this. Is there any question that anybody has about anything? Yes, back there. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, well, K-6, they're in. They're in. They're going to learn how to sing. And hopefully they're going to like it like we started. It won't be torture for them. Middle school and secondary choir, it's an elective, and I do audition them. I mean, I have started to audition them. And with the audition, it's real simple. I mean, they just have to be able to sing a simple tune, My Country 'Tis of Thee. I know their voice. But I will give them the opportunity to prove to me, hey, Mrs. Vogel, I will stay on pitch. I will stay on pitch for you, especially some of these seventh and eighth grade boys this year when I picked them up at Christmas. There were two. There were five that auditioned. 3 I took, and 2 I said, guys, you got to work on staying on pitch. You really do. So I do have a nice, simple audition for those folks. Yeah. Okay.
We have great support. If you need to go ahead and go. But we have great support. When I first came to Schaefer, they committed to having me. Well, they were going to start the string program, and then I also taught Latin in the younger grades of the year and did study halls. But they committed to bring me on full time, so I was there to teach lessons, because you've got to have lessons if you're going to start a program. And what we do, actually, we have a $50 fee for band and orchestra. And that doesn't pay my salary. My salary is paid by the school, but so it's just like all the other teachers. And we have a certain number of SUCONs that we have to fill. But everything I purchased for the program, I mean, when I came, you know, you need things like timpani to fill out the sound, because I didn't have any low brass yet, or I didn't have tubas, or I didn't have any of those instruments, and percussion was very, very sparse. But there's a $50 fee. So like my first year, you know, I had like maybe 70 students. That was $3,500 to start spending on music. Well, this year I had 150 students, and they all have this $50 fee. That was over $10,000. So we don't do any fundraisers, it's just a fee. And we just tell them, you know, this pays for all the lessons through the year. This pays for all their music. You know, it's just when the parents, it's not a problem at all, because they know what it would cost to do lessons monthly, to have them be. We have local honors choirs and honor bands in Rochester, you know, and it's like $500 a year to be a part of those groups, I know. So that's how we fund the band and the orchestra program. Choir, I don't know. So does that answer your question? Is there more that you mentioned, or?
Oh,
my first year I came, they built It was growing. And when I came, it kind of stopped. We've been about 355 to 370 now for 8 years. It's kind of like where we've been. And when I came, they actually were out of classrooms, so they had a big building project, and they built a room, a music room. So we share a room. I set up 65 chairs 3 days a week. I tear down, sand everything. My orchestra actually meets in the entryway of the school, while the choir meets in the music room. So we do have a room that's specifically for music, and it's used all the time for lessons, everything. They did build a room, and it's connected to the lunchroom, but they can open the wall if they need it, the lunchroom bigger, which we haven't given. You know, I actually like being in the entryway with the strings because it kind of shows off my group. It's kind of fun. We're kind of crowded in there. We're kind of crowded in the front door now. But it's great, and I have people walking by. One person works in the office. I love it when strings make, because I get to hear you practice. I'm like, oh, but those days when we're sight reading. She's like, it's okay. I know you're sight reading. And so, anyway, well, that's what we do. Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
I thought somebody told me it was in our book, so I thought, is it? It's in your book, I think. It's in the book, I think they said. So, yeah. If you have a question, I guess it's lunch next, so they don't have somebody coming in next. So you're free to keep talking. So I thought somebody was going to be coming in.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I meet twice a week with all of my elementary students. So one for general music, one time a week for general music, and then once for choir. Yes. General music will be the individual class, and choir is for that grade. So we will have one to two sections per grade. We don't have more than two sections per grade. So my choirs are larger. Well, each grade has its own choir, and then when we give our concerts, my first and second graders come together. I didn't talk about concert week, but that is chaotic. But I've kind of gotten it down to a science now, where we have one gigantic rehearsal with first and second grade choir together, one. And then we have our walkthrough on Friday afternoon, and then the concert Friday evening. So that's kind of how that week. That's correct. Yes. Yeah. For choir or band. Yeah, we have done after. I'll let Karen talk to band, but during our coffee concert and then when we are in rehearsal for contests and so forth, yeah, we meet all the time.
So
we have
small groups.
Those are small groups.
Small ensemble.
Yeah.
Large groups always. And it's always
that is always during the school day. And I think it goes back to the founders of the school. And I mean, the arts are really, really important at Schaefer. In fact, we're known as the arts school in town. It surprised me, but the public schools have just cut. Yes, go ahead.
So then for band, we started off my first year, the groups always met after school. This is when we were having the computer glitches. I was going to talk about this, and I forgot stuff. We always met after school. The groups would, when I first started, the fourth grade beginner band, not the high school. There was elective hours for 7th and 12th grades for the choir, band, and orchestra. But the groups met after school, so I had a beginner band after school. I had an orchestra after school, and I had 5th and 6th grade band after school. And then lessons were during the day. Now, it's still that way with 4th grade beginner band. And with orchestra, just with the makeup of our schedule. But it's just right after school, and we're done at like 3:30. School's out at 2:45. We're done by 3:30. And it's really not, so if they have a sports activity, they usually go to 4:30, and so they can then go late to their sports activity. Now, band, 5th and 6th grade band, I kept pushing to get it during the school day because it's hard enough to keep these 5th and 6th graders wanting music. And I kept talking to the admins, and there was one or two of the sixth grade teachers, she's like, you know, I played in band. It needs to be during the school day because you're going to lose these boys. And I'm like, I know, because they're missing basketball practice. And I'm like, they practice 5 days, band one day, but they want to go to basketball. And so about 4 years ago, maybe five, we actually got, so we have one period during the day, the fifth and sixth grade band. And it's about 30, 35 kids. But at first, the teachers didn't like it. But now what they have done, they've really turned it for something good. These fifth and sixth, we have three or four fifth and sixth grade teachers. What they do a study hall with the leftover kids. And it's also a time, so if a student needs to make up a test, they miss band that day. And so it's a makeup time. It's really the only study hall our fifth and sixth graders get. And it's just those students that aren't band that get it. But it's just kind of, so just one period a week, one 40 minute, and I firmly believe if I can't get this learned in 40 minutes a week, it's too hard of a piece for my group to play. Just get something a little easier. Just one day a week for 40 minutes, all the fifth and sixth grade band together. And it works fine. So. Okay. Yeah, this was the other thing that I missed on the computer glitches. Yeah. We do pull-out lessons. It's a 20-minute pull-out lesson. During the school day, I do a schedule. At the beginning of the year, I do a schedule, and I do sectional lessons. I'll do, like this last year, I had three flutes in fourth grade. So I had all three flutes come in from fourth grade at the same time, a 20-minute lesson, and it's a schedule, and the parents know up front, your child's going to be missing a little bit of class, but I don't schedule them during their specials, because they, like, only get art one day a week, I think, or PE or music. I don't schedule them those times, and I don't schedule them during math, which is fine, because that's when I'm setting up for high school band in the morning anyway. I'm getting all the chairs and everything set up first thing in the morning is when math. So generally from 10:30 on, every 20 minutes I have a different group coming in, you know, for lessons. And I do it around their schedule. I just have to get each, it changes every year. It's not like, so that's what I spend my first 2 days of school doing, is doing up the lesson schedule. I used to do an alternate schedule, an A schedule and a B schedule, so they didn't miss the same class every week. But the teachers said, let's go back to just one schedule. And so we just do one schedule a week. And then I do schedules, lessons over lunch too. I'll do every day for kids who are struggling in class and don't want to miss class. I just figure out a different time for my lunch. That's like through the support of the admin. They pay my salary, and so I'm getting paid to be there no matter what. And then that $50 fee they pay just pays to, and the program has just grown leaps and bounds. I mean, the groups, you know, there's 100. It started first year, I had, you know, 45 elementary kids, but just 14 high schoolers. Now it's just flip flop. I have a lot more high schoolers, so.
Yes, there's
planning time.
Never enough.
Like my math, during the elementary math time is generally my planning time. That's my early morning. I actually do lessons right when I get there before school, because kids are just kind of settling in, so they come in right away. You have a couple of kids every morning right away, and then when they start their math, I stop, and then right after that, I'm setting up for my big bands and stuff, and that's my kind of prep time. I kind of call and I say, yes. I've had like up to five in a group. I think five. I sometimes have had strings, so I've had seven or eight string students, but it sometimes takes a long time. And it's strings, you just get faster with that when the strings. I'm not a string player. I'm getting a lot better, and I remember I had a mom that was a string player come in and help tune. And cause I can do it, but it just took me longer at first. And now that I've been doing it for 8 years, I had a student, you know, the concert started waving his hand, and I'm like, what? String just popped. And I'm like, okay, let's just fix it. And I fixed it, you know, and in like 30 seconds, you know, I got it all fixed and ready to go. But I would have died if that would happen. I would have been like, oh, I was like, for sure, I think I'm terrible. I can't do this, you know, but it was so. So you're wondering how many. It just depends. That is actually the hardest thing with lessons, because I have some kids that practice and go farther. It's so hard. Yeah. pretty much all during school, just mainly because our lives are just so busy. Their lives, too. I mean, they have, Mary teaches piano on her own after school. After school, that's something totally separate. That's just, she just has a studio that she does that. So, did you have, No, band is totally different. We're totally separate.
Mm-hmm.
K-6, well, you can talk about your elementary. Yeah, we're here for Saturday.
Yeah.
Yes, look us up.
Yeah,
we'd love to talk to you. You should have your principal talk to my principal, though. That would be the best thing to do.
Yes. Yeah, we have